you know, local media has an agenda that they're going to serve. I don't know who's in charge of it or what it is, if it's like a headless monster.
Why? This is a question.
Walking backwards. Yeah. Something sacred.
I don't know the names of the creep songs. Those
running
are
in circles.
Just pop in and let play.
Sea of Glass.
The Flight and the Fall.
I love Ozzy. I think he's the true definition of a rock star. So care about
by your speakers. Anybody else have any interesting stories they want to tell?
This is Doug from After the Fall. Hey, this is John Lane from the thriving tropics of Leechburg, Pennsylvania.
The Pennsylvania Rock Show. Featuring the best unsigned rock that Pennsylvania has to offer.
Hey, it's Bill, and you're tuned into the Pennsylvania Rock Show, featuring the best unsigned rock that Pennsylvania has to offer right here on PARockShow.com. With me tonight for our August show is Ed Roman. What's up, Ed?
Hey, Bill, how's it going? I'm going to say Bela, like Bela Lugosi. It just sounds, I don't know, very Eastern
Europe. Sound Dracula now.
Yo, Bela, what are you doing, crazy guy?
You know, there was an artist that I've had on the show, and I've played his music. He used to have a wax figure, like a full-size wax figure of that version of Dracula in his living room.
Oh, Bela Lugosi.
Yep.
Wow. It was, he was a horror show nut or like a wax? Okay. Okay. Because some people collect wax, you know, if old museums close down and, you know, hey, I got Katharine Hepburn in my kitchen, you know, like.
And his name is George Sable. I haven't heard from him in a few years. When we were talking off air, I told you about the 91 Dodge Daytona.
Yes, you did.
I bought it from him.
Okay. Maybe his disappearance has something to do with that wax figure.
Well, I was friends with his wife, and now it's ex-wife thing.
Or Bill, maybe he's living in the wax figure.
Maybe.
Evading taxes or something. We just don't know it.
Well, if you ever get a chance, look him up. He's an amazing guitarist.
Okay, man, I will. Provided he's not in the wax figure.
Now I'm going to have to play him in this show, so you can listen to him that way. So you're from, you told me the name. You're north of Toronto, in the city named is what again?
Rural area. Canada, and we're north of Toronto. So about 2 hours. If you looked at Toronto in a map, took your finger, just went a little northwest of there, it's a small town called Melanchthon. And it's a 230-year-old farming community. I mean, I grew up in Markham, which is only 15 miles out of the city of Toronto, but it was all countryside. We had 1,500 acres. We had dairy cattle. We had recipient cattle, which were other cows that were actually having cattle for the Holsteins to not put any stress on the animals, as well as my parents also had Blonde Aquitains, which were type of beef cattle. And now they weren't actually in North America until my parents brought them back in the 1970s. So I have this the need for open space. The rural thing is in my blood. And I love cities. Like we were just talking before the show, like, you know, in New York and Philly over the last little while. I love the big city and visiting and playing and hanging out. It never ceases to amaze me how many great conversations you can have with people, the stuff that you see, you know, good and bad. It's all part of the existence of being a musician. So, but countryside, it's, you know, paramount for me. I grow a lot of my own food, so it's hard to do that in a city.
It definitely is. It's hard to do it where I am, and it really isn't a city.
Well, and you don't need a lot of space. I mean, even where my mom is, she's almost 80. She's just on a little subdivisional street and in her backyard. It's not very big, you know, 25 feet long by about 10 feet wide. She's got huge pots with you know, cucumbers and tomatoes and lettuce and dill. And actually, she's got three different kinds of tomatoes. And she's you know what it is for me? It's actively still participating in what food is. And it's like everybody needs to eat every day. Hey, look, you know, it's 2 o'clock. I've been going since 8 o'clock this morning and I still haven't eaten anything. I have to stick something in my head. Mm-hmm. But for me, growing up on and coming from multi-generations of farmers, knowing how alive, I'm going to use that word, you feel doing it, even on a simplistic and small level, because for where I am in Canada, especially, our winters are so terrible and our summers are so short that you're living this sort of, you know, ambrosiatic moment of 3 months where it's providing for you. And to go to a garden to pull tomatoes, lettuce, peppers, potatoes, carrots, and they come directly from the yard to the hose, to the kitchen sink. They're prepared, and it's tactically relating to your food again. It's not just the eating process. That's the reward. It's like seeing your kids grow up and nurturing your children. You know, and you're weeding out their environment. You're trying to help them along, giving them good things to grow, water, fertilizer, things that help. And at a certain point in your life, when you become older, those things start to sustain you. So it's that's in that same way, that beautiful pleasure you can still have as a human by going, hey, I did this with my hands. And now all of a sudden, look what it's doing. I can share with my neighbor. I can share with my family. I'm feeding myself. And that's a pretty good feeling, Bill.
Let's relate that to music a little bit. Is that how you would say that your music evolves as well?
Well, yes. I mean, like that to me, that's, you know, I always say music is like a garden. It's the same thing with writing a song, whether it's lyrically or melodically, or pushing yourself even to understand more about what the art form is. Is all part of that same thing. I always say, you know, a gardener's work is never done. Well, neither really is a musician's, because you're always trying to learn, get better, understand the environment. You're reflecting the moment that you're living in. And it takes time sometimes to nurture a song and figure out where it's leading you. That's one of the things for me is even with the garden and the metaphor. I'm always trying something new from year to year. And it's the same thing with music. But what I have to do is pay attention to those moments that are changing and why they're changing and what is it saying to me about what that needs. So for me, that experience is very organic. What it becomes solidified in an arrangement and a recording and put on a record or performed it for an audience. But to me, it has that same process. That's what almost makes the art form, as much as it has to be a commodity for people or a business, for me, that mystical experience where songwriting is like, I'm not trying to write a song because I need to make millions of dollars. Everybody would like to make millions of dollars. And to tell you the truth, if I had millions of dollars, I would give most of it away anyway. but the reality of it is that it's always about that, living that moment and understanding what it's saying to you. Because, Bill, man, so often you get a little blurb. It's a melody idea. You start to follow it. It starts asking you, listen to this. Is this right? No, wait, it needs this. No, it wants to go here. Wait, I'm hearing something. And before you know it, over the course of a period of time, sometimes quickly, sometimes over the period of a long period of time, that will start to show itself as to what it needs to be. And lyrics work the exact same way. You have this mantra. You're in a bathtub, in a car. You're walking down the street. You hear a rhythm song. And you keep saying this phrase over and over to yourself. It may be part of a subconscious conversation that you had with somebody weeks ago, but it still impacted you, tied into some George Carlin bit you saw on Saturday night on a rerun. But all of a sudden, click. And that mantra, that metaphor leads you then through the process. So I like that about art. And for me, when I see contravity in music sometimes, and it's like I understand people like form. You know, they need to have certain things that work inside of boundaries to understand, hey, this is rock music, this is funk, it's jazz, it's whatever it is. But I think the best thing that happens is to keep an open head about it And that's the same thing like with gardening. I can't force a potato to grow a certain way. All I know is that I can nurture it to the point where it's like I'm hilling it three times, I'm pulling the weeds, yeah, it's flowering, and then all of a sudden, hey, look, potatoes. It's the same thing. Song. I'm nurturing it. Here comes a lyric. Scribble, 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 scribble. Okay, what is that? And then, oh, yeah, how's it? Oh, yeah, I remember that last part of that line. No, that might come later. Let's put it up here anyway. I don't need it right now. And boom, boom, boom. All this stuff starts to flow out on a page, and you pull it in like fruit, man. That's what it is.
This is awesome. I've never had a conversation about gardening and music at the same time.
I'm not a normal person. That's why I guess they call me special ed. I'm not trying to blow smoke up my own ass, but for me, look, life has so many frameworks that we're expected to fit into. And art to me, good art that I loved listening to as a kid, still do today, that I'm still discovering, listening to new artists, whatever it is, old artists that I'd never heard of before. I'm always going to either end of it. To me, it's always about making it magical for your moment that you're living in, whether it's you discover it or you're sharing it with somebody else because you understand it and you want to turn somebody else onto what that is. And to me, you're a teacher. We were talking about this before the show. Mm-hmm. I'm a teacher and have been for a long time. When I was a kid, my grandfather could take me out to a field, sit down there with the wind blowing. You could see the cuff of his pants moving, his hat tipped down kind of, and I'm crouching down there with him. And he picks up like a pile of earth in his hands. And I can see all the wrinkles and, you know, well-weathered hands that are starting to become arthritic from using a hoe and driving tractors for so many years. He's letting it fall through his fingers. And he's saying to me, do you see how alive this is? Like, it's almost trying to explain to me, like, this isn't just dirt, Ed. This is life. And I saw so much of that in my family between my grandparents, my parents, the way that they were exuberant about stuff, that this mentality in terms of the way you approach life should actually be symmetrical. It even helps us understand the things that we're supposedly don't understand about ourselves, our neighbors, you know. So for me, music, gardening, politics, socio-political issues, religious issues, all of those kinds of things are all part and parcel of the life experience. So for a good conversation or anything inside of that is just like that. Like we said before the interview started, it's like, well, let it happen. You can't predict an improv solo. You just know you have to be well-honed and have an open ear in order to make that beauty exist. Otherwise, it's contravity. You could write out a solo, scribble, scribble, play this. You know, here's the arrangement. But when somebody's letting it flow, it's real. And you know the difference between them.
Definitely do. If you're just tuning in, it's the Pennsylvania Rock Show. My name is Bill. I have Ed Roman on the line with me. and for some reason, that's funny.
No, my brother was here for the weekend, and I'm looking at this leopard skin hat that he dropped off at my house, which also has two apples on it from my orchard. And it's just a really weird combination when you said Ed Roman on the line. If people knew that I'm looking at a leopard skin hat with apples on it, it might solidify the conversation.
And if you're not familiar with the Pennsylvania Rock Show, we're actually doing this call as a Skype call. He's at his house in Canada. I'm at my house in the United States, in Pennsylvania, obviously. And I am going to ask him one more question, and then we're going to take a break. It's been interesting so far. We've talked about potatoes. And see, now they have to go back and listen. and how music is created. But what I want to know from you now, Ed, and you kind of you led us to this question. Name a couple of the bands that have influenced you and that you listen to regularly.
Oh, my whole life, kind of, just like I sure. Can't get enough. Well, I would definitely say that as a young kid, the Beatles were one of those bands. And the reason for that is because it's tied into my grandmother. At the age of six, she gave me a $5 bill. We went in a taxi to her hairdressers, and next to the hairdressers, there was this camera store that sold vinyl and cassettes. She said, go in and buy any record you want. So forever as a kid, as long as I can have cognitive memory, you know, people talk about the Beatles. So I went and bought Meet the Beatles. And I still have that record today, but they're definitely on a lyrical level, one of those bands, especially John, that showed me that you could be colorful and, you know, non-literal always about what you were trying to say without it just having to be black and white as far as, and through that, then that era of music led me to a lot of people like Jimi Hendrix. Now, I mean, people like, well, Ed's a bass player by trade, but I play electric guitar, acoustic guitar, drums, banjo, keyboards, you know, which, but for me, Jimmy was another one of those lyricists, as everybody's like, Jimmy's guitar playing lit it on fire. And he's a beautiful and a colorful painter of words. And because of him, then really getting into Dylan, because Dylan was such a huge impact on him. So I'm really influenced by storytellers. John Prine, there's so many, you know, in older stuff, Red Solvine, other more avant-garde versions of storytellers, which are like Tom Waits, you know, like Tom was like, would paint these pictures in his music, even in a simple quartet, like an album like Nighthawks at the Diner, but you still felt like you were shuffling under a Parisian bridge, listening to an old man whisper his tales of, you know, anxiety, you know, like that for me, kind of stirred something in me. I like that when music does more than just delivers the envelope of, okay, here's the tune. It has a greater meaning, even without all the lights and costume. So that, and then as I mentioned with Hendrix, because I'm a bass player, Jaco Pastorius, the electric bass player phenomenon from the US, he was a huge impact for me because when I got out of like, you know, it was in grade school, going to high school, nobody wanted to play the bass. Nobody, there was three guitar players in a band. So it's like, Ed, you do it. And I was handed once again by a teacher of a high school that I didn't even go to, you know, handed a buddy of mine two Jaco records, said, give this to Ed. And it made me realize again that this instrument, just like lyrical ideas, doesn't have to be in the background. It can be in the foreground. It can be melodic. And I mean, artists like Mingus and, you know, Paul Chambers and so many other great bass players played solos, heads, you know, melodies that were part of the musical creation. But he was like the Jimi Hendrix of the bass world. The prowess, helped me as a young kid understand more about myself, pushed me, you know, Geddy Lee, bands like Rush, Yes, progressive rock music, that really always turned me on. And then so that translates into today with an artist like Esperanza Spalding, you know, who's an amazing upright bass player, electric player, amazing arranger, and an incredible vocalist. So I'm always looking for that in the music. It can't just be a commodity for me. And Mike Stover might be listening like, hey, this is a business. And it is. But, that's the way I have to think about it. Otherwise, I'm not making the art that people have fallen in love with. And the 50,000 plus people around the world right now that are Ed heads that call themselves, they love that part of the art. When I say, man, your album is like, okay, there's a jazz tune, there's a folk number, there's a rock number, there's a funk number, now there's a country number, now there's this spoken word piece. I mean, that's what I think an Ed head is.
So you can't be painted into a corner. You're going to play what you like when you like.
Yeah, pretty much. But not out of like, I'm going to show you. It's because, man, I hate repetitiousness. I hate the scheduling of things. And when you hear that, I mean, look, we could argue about form. Hey, those chords have been used in this song, this song, this song, this song in the same formula. But what makes it original is the individual. As a teacher, you know, kid will come in, oh, they want to learn something musically. Okay, that we'll do it, work on it, extend it into other material from that artist. But how and what are you saying? That is the most difficult thing to be. And at the same time, the easiest, because we're always trying to define ourselves against our influences. And that then brings about our limitations. Our limitations are basically saying, you can't be you because you're not known yet. But that's the point of being you. And that's what attracts people to other people, is the fact that they are being themselves. And you can kind of tell right away. You go to a gig and you're like, man, this cat's just about the pants and the haircut. Like, what are they trying to say here? And I like a show. Like, look, man, Prince, hello. I go to a Prince show anytime, and the man wears flashy pants and he plays like a mother. So, like, why not? You know, it can be together there. I'm not trying to poo-poo the art and the carnival aspect of what it is, but that's it, man. Well, prowess.
I tell you what, Ed, we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to get more into you, but we're going to condense it a little bit.
Okay, let's do it. Let's do it.
So you're listening to the Pennsylvania Rock Show. My name is Bill, and if you were just tuning in, I was having a conversation with Ed Roman, and we'll be bringing him back on shortly. And a little bit later, you'll be able to hear from Doug Carnahan from the band After the Fall. We play some of the best unsigned rock that Pennsylvania has to offer. And he mentioned Mike Stover earlier from MTS Management Group. He actually sent me some of Ed's music, so we'll be hearing some of that as well. We'll be right back. Hey, it's Bill. If you're just tuning in to the Pennsylvania Rock Show, with me on the line is Ed Roman. Hi, Ed.
Hello, everybody. Hello, Bela. Once again.
I thought I was talking to Hicks again.
It's my Slovak coming out. I can't help it.
So, let's delve into Ed a little bit. Well, actually, let me start with this. A few months ago was when I discussed with Michael having you on the show. And I went and I checked out your Reverb Nation, and I was looking all over the place for you. And ever since then, a picture of you has been following me around the internet.
The long-haired shot with me smiling?
Yes.
Yeah, those are coming through those Google ads.
Uh-huh. Well, you should know that they're working.
That's good. This is a good thing. Who is that crazy cat?
Although recently you were replaced by a realtor. But
that somehow that doesn't surprise me.
Well, here's what happened. I designed her website, and she asked me to put the code on that makes that work. So I put it on, and then I viewed her website, and now I see her.
All the time?
Yes. Everywhere I go where there's a Google ad, it's her. But it used to be you.
People are like, are you following me around? How did that happen? Actually, I got a ton of emails over the last month about that. Like, I was just surfing Google, and there you were. And then I went into a store in a town the other day, and like Jean's behind the counter, and she goes, yeah, my husband was online the other night, and all of a sudden I turned to look, and there's Ed Roman. He's like, who's Ed Roman? He's like, he's a musician. He's playing all over the U.S. It's just like, I guess it's working. This is a good thing.
Yeah, it's definitely working. I saw you on Woot. Are you familiar with that website?
Yes, I am.
I've seen you there a lot.
Cool. Yeah, and Reverb Nation, obviously, yep. There. Yeah.
But I think it's called Web 2.0 Marketing. Is that
something? I haven't heard of that one.
Something Web 2.0. 2.0. But 2.0. It's really cool when it works.
I'll check it out. Web 2, I'm writing it down.
But, well, it's working for you.
Well, it is. I mean, you know, that's the thing. I mean, as I mentioned before, there's so many talented people everywhere. The United States, Canada, Europe, doesn't matter where you go. Overseas, Asia, doesn't matter. What has been incredible over this last year, and, you know, Mike doesn't pay me to say this, it's a joke, Mike, is that working with somebody that is talking about what you do and or believes in what you do. You know, Mike and I run this like a business, but at the same time, that's what changes everything. It allows me to go out and play across the U.S. from Austin to New York and meet more people and do your show or other shows where I get to talk about what I do and why I do it. That's why people relate to the artwork. It, you know, and on a multitude of levels, so many people we're interested in how things work. Mm-hmm. What is the mechanics behind it? And it, for me, it's a pleasure to be able to discuss what all that is. Like why a song was written. Why did you write this tune? How did it come into all of that? But once again, it also allows me to circumnavigate a multitude of topics, which is really why the music was written. And I'm always saying, people say, well, you know, what does it mean to you to be an artist? And here I'm going back to my Jaco Pastorius heritage, as I mentioned before, but Herbie Hancock wrote the liner notes for that first record that he did that had Sam and Dave on it. Herbie was on that. So many of Mate Don Elias, incredible players on that first album. The definition that Herbie put there was an artist is one who has the ability to fuse their life with the rhythm of the times. And when I read that as a kid, it sort of changed my whole perspective about, and not like I didn't feel already music was already this kind of spiritual, theological kind of thing for me. It really just made me realize that you have to create because you're living in the moment. We can write about something that's historical. We could write about something, and most of the times we are because they've already happened. So you're writing about the experience or even something futuristic. But somehow it behooves us as artists, especially in the day and age that we live in, to describe the social context, emotional, empathetic aspect of our existence at this moment. So for me, that's what the artwork is always trying to do. It's always trying to take on that, what are we saying? What are we doing to each other? Look at this situation, maybe from a different perspective, despite rules, regulations, dogma, whatever it is, dictates otherwise. And Mike and MTS, and I'm sure a lot of other artists that work with Mike, you know, testify to the same thing. It's just, we're working. We're able to practice our craft and do what we do, whether we're making millions of dollars or we're making nothing. The point is that it's getting it out there. And as so many people I know, including myself many years ago, were very frustrated with, well, how do you get it to that next level? Mm-hmm. How do you get the interreaction of it? How do you, and it's just by working at it and asking and knocking on doors, or like I said, with Mike, believing in what I do or any of the people that he works with. So for me, it's like, you know, people say, what, Ed? What if, you know, Sony Music approached you tomorrow and wanted to sign you? I'd be like, well, they're going to have a hell of a time. Because I don't want to work with their managers, artist developers, producers. The reason that Sony Music, if they came to me, would be because I and or the people that we've worked together as a unit have built this. Like, you know, Stovall would say maybe, like, well, one day you'd go on to some, I don't know. I mean, I like working with Mike or Mike Jack or the other musicians that I've played with on so many different other records that I kind of in that way. It's not incestual.
Well, it's, and the just, thing, the music business as a whole has changed, and it's not, I mean, the majors are there, but they're not what they used to be.
No, they're actually almost floating in like this ether of, yes, no, we're holding our own and we're holding it to in a death grip. But as I said before, off air, we were talking a little politics. The industry that we're working in, what we're talking about, independent radio, blog talk radio, independent artists, is like municipalities. That's where the real art happens. That's where the real work is done. The majors just sit there. They're like, you know, an old sucked out boob that is still expecting the, you know, to more. And even the artisans, a lot of, like, and that's the other thing. The artisans that they have are still, you know, 20, 30 years old, and they're toting. Where's the new farm team?
Well, and they have a specific look and they all sound the same.
Right. Right. And that's what,
and I that's think what I like about what I do. I get to hear artists that other people don't hear, you know. And people will say to me, have you heard so-and-so's song? I'm like, no, but have you heard Ed Roman's song? And they're like, who? Yeah. Well, and then I get to turn them on to you.
Well, and likewise, and that's the other thing, where this goes hand in hand is that, and I've said this to so many people, I feel like this is a very special moment in communication history. We're so, I mean, kids today that you know, are under the age of 20, they've always had the internet kicking around. Mm-hmm. You know, 92 was the big kick in time frame or whatever, but.
And I graduated high school in 95. So I was at the beginning of that when I was hitting college.
So that's it. Like the internet music, independent industry, artists is kind of like what the 1950s radio of yesteryear was like. So you had Milton Berle and Steve Allen that were all on radio shows. And then all of a sudden, boom, television comes. All those big, huge hosts and artists left to go to television.
Mm-hmm.
And radio was like, well, what are we going to do? They started spinning rock and roll. And every kid through the 1950s onward into the, for, you know, transistor radio era could listen to the music that their parents weren't listening to. And it carved a whole new generation of artists, an industry that was never there before on the magnitude that it was, and a beautiful growth period of a whole different kind of, you know, genres of music, artisans that went on for an incredible amount of time. Now that's what's happening again. We've almost gone back to that singles market where if you open up a kid's phone or they might have, you see the record is there by the artist, but there's only one song. That's like the singles era of yesteryear where you bought the 45 with the A and B side. The A side was the hit because that's got played in the jukebox. But it wasn't until later that the artist would put together a record album, which were all those smaller records, 78s, or all put together in a booklet. So now we're doing the same thing. We're grabbing hold of what that new technology is or older technology concepts and going, hey, we're working it together and we're building something new and special mm-hmm. that was never there before. The bell curve has already come and gone. So we're the new thing.
I asked a question recently on Facebook and we'll see how you feel with the way that technology is moving. Do you think there's going to be a time where the CD is eliminated and everything's just digital?
Absolutely. Well, we're on the verge of that now. I think in your day and age, we will see kids. There will be no cell phones, and they'll all be hardwired.
Oh. I don't know if I'd do that. Technology is what I do. It's what I teach. I don't know if I could do that.
But talk to a 75 or 80 year old person today that isn't internet friendly that says, I don't want to participate in that.
Mm-hmm.
So it works on the same level. I have to keep reminding myself as I get older. Same thing with students that are much younger than me, and they're always getting the new thing, and they're teaching me things a lot of times. But I see something incorrect about it, where so many things over the course of human civilization, whether it was the beginning of the industrial era, electrical, excuse me, any of those things, all of that was something that you put down near the end of the day. So nowadays, what I'm getting at is like so many people go to bed with their phones or their iPads and they're on them for hours.
My tablet and my phone sit on my end table.
So, you know, I'm getting at.
I do.
So a hammer many, many years ago was a form of technology, if you really want to look at it that way. But I don't know too many people or carpenters that go to sleep with their saws or hammers or any of those. So for me, what I think it is a recognizational thing. You have to recognize what it is, that it is a tool. There'll always be those changes to the modification of how we do things through necessity sometimes. But I don't want to lose the subtle energy feeling of a human, of being human, still connected to this circular ball has this organic, huge organic quality to it. A man is always forever, even in the advent of the system of gardening and pruning, has been trying to manipulate the chaotic environment that we live in and make it more suitable to things that seem to be more comfortable to us. But at the same time, it can also weaken you. I've seen a great change in social skills, and you as a teacher, you must have seen the same thing where man, if a 15-year-old can't carry on a conversation because they spent too much time texting, that's not healthy.
And patience.
Patience.
Yeah, because they're so used to, you know, they ask a question on the internet, they have an answer.
You know, right.
If there's a problem, they Google it. You know, if they need a song, they go to iTunes. Everything's instant. And that's not how it works in the classroom. You're supposed to work through things.
Right. And you say, you just use that example of iTunes. Like, okay, right away you can get, okay, we're just in Philly. I was at the Record Grouch. That's not a plug. But look, literally I found, I'm looking at it right now. Grover Washington, live at the Bijou, 2 record set. Okay. Original year printing. I've been looking for this record for 15 years. You can't get it on iTunes. But the victory that I felt that day.
Because you spent all that time trying to find it.
It's like I'm getting a shiver now just talking about it. And for me, having that tangible thing in my hand to look at, and maybe it still placates that sense of like, that's what we did back then. You put on vinyl. Who's changing? Who's flipping it? You know, we put the needle back so we can listen to that tune again. That's kind of gone. But that nostalgia, I think, is also the other aspect of what technology is also destroying. Because you don't have that presence of what it represents. It's digitized. Mm-hmm. It's like the same thing with food. You're not out there touching carrots and potatoes and growing things. It's like, no, I just went to the grocery store, put it in a bag and came home.
Right.
And the thing for me, which makes it seem like a ruse in the way that it's sold, especially through the commercial aspect of it, is when you're told that you need this. When I see commercial, cooking is drudgery. You're so busy. The kids are at work. Da 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 da. That's the most important thing you can do over the course of your day with your family is connect on that level. So to tell people that that is drudgery is like programming them, television programs, hello, throw your TV sets out, telling them that you shouldn't be doing that, that that's not the right thing for the 21st century. But the reality of it is, what is that right thing? And I think that's what I'm getting at, is that people don't even know how to navigate even what that is, because there's so much information coming at everybody all the time. They don't know how to deal with it.
Well, are you familiar with Nostradamus at all?
Oh, I've read all of his quatrains. I have all of the actual translations, the original translations, and all of his letters that he wrote to Caesar.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but he predicted that the end of the world would come when there was a worldwide web that connected everybody.
He did say something to that level. But you know what else? I had a lady that was a friend of our family's, and I guess you could call her a medium or a psychic, or in old world terms, maybe a witch. But she was one of the most beautiful people I've ever met in my life, just because of the way that she looked at the world. And when I was 20, just after my dad died, she came to me and she sat down. And she did like a mini astrological chart. And she said, when you're like older, because this was like 1990, okay? Mm-hmm. Says to me, there's going to be advice that you'll be able to hold in your hand, and you'll be able to communicate to anybody in the world, like on Star Trek with Captain Kirk. And you can translate any language, and you'll be able to get anything that has ever been done in the palm of your hand. Now, if that doesn't sound like John of Patmos's, you know, the apocalypse in the head or the hand metaphor, that's maybe what that represents, is this loss of our subtle human behaviors and being absorbed into the manipulated system that we all know is there. That's why we, from year after year, shake our head and go, why is that happening? Why is that happening? That doesn't make sense. Hey, I voted for that cat. Why is that not... So those are the kinds of things that I'm always getting at. Even in the artwork, I'm asking those kinds of questions. On the last record, the first tune, I Told You So, is asking those kinds of things. Who builds the myths inside our shopping carts and all the hearts of everyone?
Can I just tell you how easy you're making this for me? I'm sitting here staring at my other laptop, and I have I Told You So up on my screen. That was the next thing I was going to ask you.
Well, see, but this is the other thing about subtle energy, is that I'm still, as a person, and God bless my grandmother for being this way, attuned to this thing. I have this happen so often in my life. The other day I posted the story of Big Phil, which was this blade knife that my buddy brought with us across the border when we were kids going down to play in Poconos at a youth festival. And I just did, I told the story and showed the knife in this little YouTube video. He sends me a text message. He says, you know what? I haven't thought about that for 15 years. I open up Facebook and there it is. So for me, that's what I'm getting at, is that subtle tuning to how we interact with one another. And I'd like you to talk about it. I told you so. It's saying the same thing. What are those dogmatic practices that we're all living with that we know are incorrect, but do nothing about to change it? I told you so is not, I want to shove it in your face. See? Nah, you're wrong. But it's like, you know, the Joni Mitchell, pave paradise and put up a parking lot. Don't think about what you're losing before it's gone. Those are important things to be asking and living it, as opposed to like looking for the critical push button mentality to change what those things are or the person that has all the answers. That's dangerous. Look what Hitler did in the Second World War. I got all the answers. We're going to build Germany up. Treaty of Versailles messed us up. They can't do this to us. No, we won't invade you. Click. Yeah. You know, here we come. Here we come. And that's what I think is dangerous about the day and age that we live in, is that we're so conditioned, like you said, to that push button, instantaneous, here's the answer, that really what the answer is living it. I've been lucky enough to spend time with Aboriginal people of this country, and their idea is a 7-generation mentality. What that means is you can't just be thinking about today. You have to be thinking about 7 generations in front of you, and what you do today will impact what that is.
Wow. I'm going to switch on you real quick because this just popped into my head. And it's probably going to seem, it's the word I want to use, stereotypical, but
so, okay. Everything is good, man. It's fair play.
So the national sport of Canada is lacrosse, correct?
Well, that's what they say, but I know it's ice hockey. Yeah.
But my question is, have you ever played lacrosse?
Yeah, man, I even still have my old racket. Man.
Nice.
I
played in college and I coached it.
It's not fiberglass, not high school.
You have the wooden, like the Iroquois version.
The Iroquois. Well, see, when my family first came here from Slovakia in 1929, they came to Toronto, but they couldn't find work. So they moved to Scugog Island. Okay, most Canadian towns and cities are named after an Aboriginal, just like in the States. Certain, okay, Toronto means where the rivers meet. Okay, Canada means, with a K actually, the village. So Scugog was another denomination of Indigenous people. They lived with them. They were on the edge of the reservation. Some of the first things that my dad ever did that were Canadian were actually Aboriginal Canadian. So I have a deep affiliation with those cultures. And I was lucky enough to tour with an African band, believe it or not, many years ago, 2001 already, all across Canada playing reservations, which is beautiful and at the same time really hard to deal with because there's a lot of poverty and abuse in those places. But at the same time, there's a lot of amazing people. Mm-hmm. But I still got my stick. In fact, it's weird you said that because we had a terrible storm here last night and I was trying to barbecue and I had to pull the barbecue into the garage because I was making chicken wings, and when I did that I knocked it off of the wall, and I just picked it up yesterday. Here you are mentioning lacrosse sticks. So third eye. Woo-hoo!
Yeah, I didn't play lacrosse until I hit college, and it was I played deck hockey, which I believe is ball hockey in Canada.
Yep.
And I was playing ball hockey, actually roller hockey, with my college's ice hockey team during the off season, and then their season started and I had nothing to do. And there was a sign on the wall and it said men's lacrosse, no experience necessary. And I was like,
I'll try that. And that's how I got into it.
Body checking. I'm good.
Let's go. I played goal.
Oh, did you? Did you?
Yeah, I still have a dent in my shin.
Hey, listen, that's a hard position to play, too. I mean, aside the rough play that could be out there, you got that rubber ball coming at you, and it's like having a
puck come at you, right? I still remember my very last save. I went back. I played in an alumni game. And the guy who played the first half was probably in his 50s. And I had just graduated like 2 years before I went to play. And this guy, you know, we're playing against a college team. And he cranks a shot. It hits me in the thigh.
Welt.
It, yeah. And I went to myself, why am I in this crease? I was like, there's absolutely no reason for me to be here anymore. I'm not playing for a record. I'm not trying to win games. I walked off the field, walked over to the other goaltender. I said, hey, I'm going home. You can finish.
Were you wearing a cup, I hope?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. I was going to say, man, because I mean, who cares if you're 50? You got a lacrosse stick in your hand. You can get that ball going real fast.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I have one more question for you, and it's a quick answer.
Okay.
Where can everybody find you online?
EdRoman.net, N-E-T, just like it sounds. And all my buttons are there, from Facebook to Twitter to YouTube. You can check me out on SoundCloud if you want. You can get the Ed Roman app for free for your Android or iPhone. It's on iTunes. So check it out. I'll be in your pocket. Photos, videos, gigs, interviews, everything that I'm doing is in the Ed Roman app.
All right. Well, thanks again for being on the show, Ed.
Bill, pleasure. Always good talking to you, my friend.
And I'm sure this won't be the last time.
All right, cool. And when I get down to PA, we'll hook up for something.
That's awesome. So you're listening to Pennsylvania Rock Show. I am going to play I Told You So by Ed Roman. Earlier we heard Come In My Way, which we didn't get a chance to discuss. Maybe we'll do that the next time.